Okay, hello everyone. Welcome to Podcast Tech Effect. In today's podcast episode, we'll be discussing the topic of cybersecurity. Today, joining our guest is Agris Cruz, who has quite extensive experience in this particular field. Maybe introduce yourself.
My name is Agris Cruz, and I'm founder of IT Centers Pen Testing Company. So basically, what we are doing, security audits and pen tests for quite a long time already.
Great. So about myself, I'm an expert in audio and video testing. I'm leading efforts to ensure accuracy and consistency of test result data. Also managing one of the Test Data Lab's biggest audio and video benchmarking projects. So Agris, how did you choose to advance your career in the IT industry?
It was quite long time ago, actually. So when I was interested in IT stuff, and which was not very popular at that time. It was end of 80s, basically, more or less, and it was even quite hard to get to computers. So for that reason, I decided to go to university, Latvian University, which is Faculty of Informatics. What was called at that time. So, and basically that's it. I was interested in mathematics, but I didn't think mathematics is quite as good potential at that time as basically IT.
So how long exactly have you been working in industry?
I started as a system administrator, or not a network administrator, for Novell Networks, which is kind of, if someone remembers that, in 1994.
1994, amazing. I wasn't born yet. Okay, and how did you end up to founding your own company?
I just was interested in doing stuff for myself. So I don't really like to work for someone else. I don't like bosses, and it's easier to work as at the beginning it was self-employed. Now it's not exactly self-employed, but I don't have bosses, and it's easier for me. So I have my time, I can plan for myself, and it's usually much more interesting than working in a company.
Can you tell us a bit more about IT Center? What does the company provide, and who benefits from your services?
IT Center, so it's basically not large, small IT consulting company, which we are mostly doing pen tests, mostly web application pen tests and mobile application pen tests, using OWASP methodologies, and from time to time we are doing security trainings, security awareness trainings for employees of clients, and hands-on hacking trainings. So basically showing how to hack into the systems and doing stuff like this.
Can you explain what cybersecurity testing is and what penetration testing is?
It's quite a wide definition, but in essence, it's testing systems for security weaknesses. If you want a short definition, I'm in security testing industry for quite a long time. So I started my company in 2000. And from 2004, mostly I'm doing security testing and security consulting. So it's changed quite a lot from this time. So one thing, how you could look at it, as we as pen testers look at the systems as hackers and try to hack into the system and get some data, get some access. But if you look at this landscape now, so we mostly work using some methodologies. So this OWASP testing guide, OWASP application security verification standard. So basically it's checklist what you have to check, but you still have to do it think about it, how to apply it. It's not just simply following checklist. If you are just following checklist, you most probably won't find much interesting
stuff. So you still need to be creative.
Yes, definitely.
Could you maybe provide or describe the process of conducting a pen test, including the planning phase?
Okay, so it's our industry even has some penetration testing execution standard, which kind of goes through these steps. But in general, so basically, the first we and client should agree what to test and how to test. So, and we mostly work for we mostly do web application security pen tests, which are a bit different, like from red team tests or other kind of infrastructure testing. So basically we agree on the testing scope, which is might be testing guide over space VS particular level, what kind of things we're gonna check, what kind of things we don't want check. And usually we test in test environments, not in production, with full set of user accounts, depending on usage of the system. It's not just black box testing. It's more like we are going through all functionality and more or less all possibilities, what you can do with systems. So it's kind of involve a test.
Have you ever been involved in physical pen tests?
Yeah.
You are. Yes. So is there maybe a particular memorable case you can share with us?
These physical pen tests are kind of interesting, and nowadays many of them are called red team tests, but it's very, to be honest, it's taking account that almost all pen tests are have some kind of NDA, you cannot discuss them publicly. So they are quite interesting situations where police are called or almost called on the premises. For example, system administrators usually after the tests are hating us, or if you are talking about physical penetration tests, then security guys are hating, are not very nice to us, because usually we are able to get inside the buildings, connect to the systems, and they are not happy about it.
Well, true. Maybe for those that don't know, you could explain what is red team and what is also blue team.
Red team usually is, this definition comes from military, so basically this is attacking force, and blue team is usually, again, if it comes from military, it's kind of like friendly force, which protects some assets or infrastructure and things like that. So if you talk about definitions in this way, but there is specific testing type, red team test, where basically organization tests the blue team. Blue team are administrators.
So defensive side, right?
Kind of.
And
like
the red team is offensive side.
Yes, you can look at it this way, yeah.
Okay. And which side do you like more, blue side or the red side?
Well, we don't usually work for blue side. We are usually in this offensive side, even in web application pen tests. So basically, we are kind of simulating attacks and simulating what hackers or bad people could do with the system. So I don't really like blue teams, but from time to time, I take part in blue team exercises as well. For example, NATO is doing yearly some big cyber exercise which called Lock Shields, and usually I take part in blue team, because I don't really like this red team approach in that particular exercise.
Is it like a hackathon?
No, it's not like hackathon. It's basically there are quite a lot of teams from various NATO countries which are protecting some infrastructure, and there is red team attacking them. It's kind of similar to CTFs, but basically it's more meant for blue teams to test abilities to protect infrastructure.
Okay, if we're talking about the CTFs, are they actually helping the CTF challenges, and are you doing them in the past?
To be honest, I don't know if they are helping. It's the problem with CTFs and even with these kind of like big exercises are that they are very artificial. So if you're gonna do CTFs, what you're gonna basically know is how to do CTFs and be very good at doing CTFs. But in real life, its situation might be quite different. So, but yeah, it's a very good thing to start to test your skills, because the problem with the real tests that you usually need permission to do the real tests.
Well, you can do it without as well, no?
No, it's they are bug bounty programs, actually. Yes, you can do it without permission, but there are some risks there as well, and they are quite, in some cases, quite restrictive. So CTFs are good learning tool, at least at the beginning, but when you are doing them, take into account that they are not the real things.
Okay, and how did you learn then everything?
Reading and basically testing, reading, testing, trying things, and
So mainly self-study type of work, right?
Yeah, more or less. Because when you look at when I started this thing, it was 2004. I don't think there was an even term CTF actually. We started with trainings. Actually, I took part for maybe someone knows zoneh.org website, which was active at that time. So it was kind of like hacker community where people could post their achievements in defacing other websites. So basically, it's kind of was operating in kind of gray zone, and script kiddies or good hackers basically could post their achievements. Oh, I defaced this particular site and post it on ZoneH, and we were doing hands-on hacking trainings around the world. So I was doing trainings here in Latvia, Estonia, Germany, Denmark, United Kingdom, Republic of Korea, and so on. So it was an interesting time. So
and amazing.
During trainings, we had kind of like CTFs for the people during the trainings to complete the assignments, but we didn't call them CTFs.
Okay. Have there ever been a situation where you are unable to find the vulnerabilities during a pen test, and what options there are available to you?
It's the problem with finding vulnerabilities. It's not the problem with finding vulnerabilities. We are basically our approach for security testing is try to find almost all vulnerabilities which are possible to find. So for that reason, you usually could find some low risk things, misconfigurations, which are not really serious. So it's. They probably have been a couple of pen tests for clients which we are testing for years, various systems, where there are sometimes systems where there is no any serious vulnerability. So basically it's one or two findings which with low risk problems. But usually it's a mix of high risk, critical, and so on. So
have you come across any 0 days? Vulnerability?
Yes, we have done, me myself and colleagues have found some new vulnerabilities in commercial software and things like that. Will you call it 0 day? I don't think so, because everyone has a bit different definition about 0 day, but theoretically 0 day is a vulnerability which you don't have the fix and which is actively exploited. So for that reason, I could not tell that we have found 0 days in that sense, but we have found some new vulnerabilities in various, for example, in Jira, there are a couple of vulnerabilities my one colleague found. I have found a couple of vulnerabilities in some routers. And
have you ever been caught and removed from a network while conducting a pen test when you're doing external pen tests?
Now you mean that administrators have caught us?
Yeah.
Sometimes it happens, but not usually. In many cases, if it's pure red team test, administrators might block us. But we are not doing them quite regularly, so quite rarely. Even if it's infrastructure test, it's more or less authorized, and more or less administrators know that things are happening, so they are not kicking us out. So,
and have there been a situation where the network administrator is like creating a pen test more difficult just before you do your work?
They not really. So in general, how at least it works in our pen tests and how we are working usually. So the main client almost always is IT department director. So he plans for it, and he usually makes sure that he fixes some things before the pen test. But I don't think it's making us, making life difficult for us, because the reason for pentester is actually to find vulnerabilities, and if the administrators are able to close them before the test, also making us our life harder, it's actually a good thing.
What are the different types of cyber attacks and how do they work?
Different types of cyber attacks. It's very very wide topic.
Well,
actually.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. So it's there might be some phishing attacks which are kind of popular for various reasons. They are nation state attacks which combine various means. There could be denial of service attacks, which again, different types, which are pure network attacks, application level attacks, and so on. So, and yeah, how to protect against them? It's again very long discussion.
Okay, as we know, there's DDoS, right? How do hackers conduct distributed denial of service, and how it can be mitigated from the administrative perspective?
Regarding mitigation, it's actually quite hard to mitigate them. So, but how hackers attacking? So, they are more than one type of denial of service attacks. So, they are pure network level attacks. For example, when someone sends using, for example, UDP protocol, sends some small data to some vulnerable systems. And these systems respond with a large amount of data. And during this attack, this UDP packet, which is sent out to this vulnerable device, has forged source IP address. So vulnerable device doesn't send response back to the attacker, but sends to the victim. So, and you can actually amplify, if you know quite a lot of these vulnerable devices, you can do quite a good amplification and make big traffic to the target. But mitigation in this case is simple, that basically each network should check, does packets leaving its network make sense? So if someone sends, for example, UDP packet to some other destination with source IP address which is not in your network, so definitely this IP packet should not leave this network. So fixing vulnerable devices, this is another matter, because usually the guy with vulnerable device doesn't even know that something bad is happening, and actually doesn't disrupt his service. So for that, I don't think he's gonna do something. Is it so? For and from as a recipient of this attack, so you should make sure that your internet service provider could provide you with DDoS attack, so DDoS attack protection, so that all the traffic is basically is not reaching you, so he detects it. But they are kind of more types of DDoS attacks, but there is the attack which is in application level, where you have to make this connection to the system. Usually it's again done with vulnerable devices, some internet facing routers, cameras and things like that. So these cameras are connecting to system, and for example with the HTTP protocol, and basically making requests to the system. And this is kind of very hard to protect against these attacks, and you don't need so much traffic, and you can basically kill many websites with a small amount of devices.
And what about SQL injection attacks?
Oh, these are very interesting attacks. When we were doing trainings, actually, which was beginning trainings in beginning of 2000s, it was usually before each training session, we went to Google, did some search to find SQL injection attacks, vulnerabilities, actually.
And how do you exploit the vulnerabilities in the database?
Okay, I was starting about exploiting. So at the beginning, for those who don't know, which is SQL injection is basically security problem where attacker could send some arbitrary data to application, and it's going to be executed in database, underlying database. So you can extract data from the database, run commands on server sometimes, and sometimes modify the data. So, and it is very, very long, a very old vulnerability in that sense that from time I was in security testing business, it was relevant. Sometimes at some years it went down, but nowadays actually it's quite not as very common, but some maybe 5, maybe 10% of pen tests we see SQL injection vulnerabilities. The difference between those times in 2004, for example, and nowadays, if it's going to be SQL injection, it most probably going to be blind SQL injection. So that
so there are different types of injections.
Yes, the blind is more difficult to exploit because you don't see any output usually. You are working with sleep statements and SQL queries and using them to extract the data. But in 2004, you can do just a simple Google query, find a bunch of sites with SQL injection, and basically you can dump the databases and extract user passwords, because in 2004, many systems stored clear text passwords in the databases. Or use, for example, this trick with OR statement in login form and login in quite a lot of CMSs and things like that.
And how do organizations detect and mitigate the ongoing injection attack, for example?
You can use web application firewalls,
okay,
which might prevent them, but it's not guaranteed that it's going to prevent. And so basically you should check your implement good logging policy. For example, OWASP recommends that you should log into your logging system exception when data validation checks fail. So that if someone even tries to find SQL injection vulnerability, you should see in your logs that there is a problem, that this data didn't pass input validation checks. And so basically this is almost only way how to detect some things.
If we compare the 2000 and the year now, how has the SQL injection attacks evolved over time? And what can organizations do to stay ahead of these threats?
Good software development practices.
That's the main answer to everything.
And testing. So you should implement good software development practices. Testing, make sure that you are not using concatenated strings, making SQL injection queries, but using some frameworks and libraries to sanitize input, and that is the reason actually why they are not as common as, for example, 20 years ago. So, and nowadays they are usually totally blind injections when you need sleep statements, and it's very, very rare to find so-called union-based SQL injections when you could see the output of the database on the screen. So they are easy to exploit, easy to find. But still it's possible. Probably you can use Google, DuckDuckGo, or some other search engine to search for interesting sites which has potential for SQL injections.
How about man-in-the-middle attack? How can it be detected and prevented if an attacker conducts one?
Again, fortunately, technologies are helping us in that way. That we have TLS and all these services, and it's if we are looking at the man-in-the-middle attacks, then it's very hard to pull out, basically to do nowadays, because if the system is using TLS and encrypt the traffic, there are still possibilities. For example, in Windows networks, using weaknesses in SMB protocol, using, for example, a tool like Responder to do these man-in-the-middle attacks. But if you are using modern applications using HTTPS, and so
what tools do they use?
Sorry?
What tools do they use for the middle?
It used to be quite a lot of tools. So basically, art poisoning, can enable very, very old tool for Windows. Nowadays, I guess most successful tool would be Responder, which is might say this is kind of man in the middle attack. So where you can gather Windows credential hashes and then try to escalate things and try to guess the passwords or try to hijack the connections. In the usual, it's if you look at typical organization and if you are using cloud services and Office in the cloud, most probably attackers will gonna have very hard time to exploiting you. But if still you have all file servers in your organization, so it's easier for attacker if he has access to your local network. In internet, I would say it's very difficult to pull out, basically do this man-in-the-middle attacks if you are not nation-state.
Okay, why is that?
No, probably nation-states are some possibilities to forge certificates. So basically, to get inside TLS connection, you have to able to make your own certificates for popular sites, and nation states are able actually to redirect internet traffic using BGP protocol weaknesses and steal some data in that way. So if it's a regular hacker which basically wants to have ransom payments, most probably he won't be able to do it. Of course, if the other possibilities, of course, is that you are not using TLS correctly, so then it's easier, of course. But if you are using TLS correctly, it's very hard.
If we're speaking about ransomware attacks, how can organizations prevent them? And how do hackers organize them or create?
Usually normal security practices. So basically, if we are looking at small countries like ours, where we have small companies, most probably you should not put some services on internet. For example, a remote desktop is very, very bad idea. File services on internet is very, very bad idea because these are potential entry points for these attacks. And if you are a bigger organization, you most probably have to train your employees for phishing attacks and so that they can understand that phishing attack is happening. It definitely won't prevent all the risks regarding phishing attacks and ransomware, but at least it will be harder for attacker.
Okay. If we're going back to the penetration testing, right? What do you do if you break the allowed limits in the pen test?
We usually try not to break them.
Usually, but it happens sometime maybe. Right?
It's... we talk with client, but usually it doesn't happen. So we have sometimes the problem is that sometimes client might forget to define these limits, and technically we are not breaking them. But it's at least it means that client didn't think about this. But we usually don't break limits in pen tests, and if it's potentially risky thing, we talk with client and agree, are we doing it and where we are doing it. But there were situations where, for example, we did port scan from a compromised web server for internal network, and some storage system, storage array went down and rebooted, and this storage array was basically providing disks for billing system, and it was... Client was not very happy, but then again, he didn't warn us about it and other things that internal network and the system should not be available from DMZ and from web servers. So,
What kind of system is the most easiest way to perform pen tests?
It's hard to say that it's easier to perform pen tests on some systems. So, I don't think they are easy ones or hard ones. So if it's static web page, it's easiest because there is almost nothing to test and very easy to do the pen test. But most probably you won't find anything interesting. If it's a very complex system, So yeah, it's very complicated. For example, I would say that you might be asking which are the most difficult systems to test to do pen tests.
Well, we can rephrase like that.
Yeah, it's we have seen, for example, systems where when you do improper inputting, for example, are posting some SQL injection payloads, cross-site scripting payloads, system just logs you out when it detects it. Very hard to test such systems. There are some frameworks which are basically sending back to the system your mouse clicks in basically where you are, what you are doing on particular part of the page, and it's very hard to guess what kind of input data are basically you should send in these particular cases. But if it's easiest would be probably some custom made systems, very simple PHP systems where it's easy to find things and easy to break things.
Okay, as we know, there's a thing called honeypot in cybersecurity, right? How can you describe it? What is honeypot and how does it actually work?
In general, honeypot is the system you put out hoping that attackers are going to notice it and start attacking it and start gathering information, and you're going to get alert that there's something wrong going on in the network. So this is, in essence, how you could use it in your regular network. There are honeypots which are put by security researchers, for example, to basically say the vulnerable systems or just regular systems on internet where they should not be, and they are analyzing attack patterns and how they are these systems are being attacked. So this is another use of honeypots.
And are there different type of honeypots?
They are definitely. So basically, you think about any IT service and it could be honeypot.
Oh, okay. And what is the potential risk and drawback of using a honeypot?
If you are doing it correctly, probably there is no big risks, but you should isolate it from the network and and think about that it's still just one part of your IT security posture or IT security strategy, so that maybe hackers gonna be able to penetrate your network and your honeypot won't notify you. So they might be such possibility as well. For that reason, it's kind of very good tool, but it's not that it's gonna give you 100%. 100% idea that you are safe.
How do we integrate the honeypot into cybersecurity strategy, for example?
Monitoring. So basically, you want to get some information from honeypot that something is going on. So if you have some monitoring team, blue team, which are monitoring log files, so probably they are monitoring system availability, they should get notifications from honeypot that something bad is going on. So if you don't have such blue team or monitoring team which monitors the activity in your network, so just putting out honeypot, I don't think it can give you any benefit.
So there's also intrusion detection system in the cybersecurity, right? How does it work and are the different types of it?
They are looking for attacks. So basically, there are benefits and there are risks in intrusion detection systems and intrusion prevention systems, which are kind of active systems. When they are detecting some threats, they're going to block this attack, so block IP address or something like that. So
IDS works together with a honeypot, right?
No,
but you can create
difference. IDS is IDS monitors network traffic usually. This network traffic IDS or host-based IDS monitors behavior on the host itself. So honeypot is a vulnerable system or just interesting system, okay, which you are putting in your local network or corporate network or outside network, which you hope gonna attract the hackers. IDS is just a software or hardware device, a software program or hardware device which are monitoring your network traffic or monitoring activities on the host. So what kind of programs are running and what they are doing, and it's a bit different. So, but the problem is that they are usually signature based or heuristic based. So hackers are might be able to fool them. This is one risk of IDS. Is again, they're not going to give you 100% insurance that everything is fine. Other thing is that, as I mentioned before, that almost all traffic is encrypted nowadays with TLS. If it's TLS traffic, IDS won't see any problems in it because it's encrypted and it's not able to see. Your approach might be to decrypt the traffic, but then you have to install some special software on certificates, not software, on client computer, on your office computer, so that IDS could decrypt the traffic and see inside these things, and it creates additional risks.
Can you maybe explain how the cryptography and encryption work, and different types of the encryption algorithms?
How it works again? I'm not basically expert in encryption, basically you could in internet you can look at two types of encryption, which is symmetrical encryption. So basically, where you have one key to encrypt and decrypt the data, and public key encryption systems, where so basically you are using two separate keys to encrypt the data and a different key to decrypt the data. Again, if you look at how modern internet works, it's a combination of both. So for example, TLS uses public key cryptography to establish a connection and basically to exchange these symmetrical keys. And afterwards, all the traffic is encrypted by symmetrical keys. They might be rotated from time to time. And so basically, this is how it works. To work properly, you have to have some very secret public private key on the server, on both sides of the server. You definitely have to protect it, because if someone steals this private key, he theoretically could compromise security of these TLS connections. If you are using PGP, modern e-signature systems, they are all using similar architecture. So there is public key cryptography and real encryption is done with symmetrical key. The reason is why it's not encrypted with public key, it's very resource intensive. So symmetrical key encryption is much more faster.
What are the benefits and drawbacks of using the firewall?
Firewall, you should definitely use the firewall. It's a practice which comes from, I don't know when it started exactly, the practice of using firewalls, but it was definitely 20 years ago or even more. So basically, firewall just makes sure that you are exposing only services you want to expose to some internet, to external network and things like that. So, and this is a benefit. So it's additional layer of control for your services. If some application opens the port on your computer or whatever, so firewall gonna block it if it's not allowed. At least it should be configured like that. So drawbacks of firewalls, you have to basically, if it's a big organization, it's a bunch of complicated rules. So what port should be open from what IP addresses, and it's very hard to make sure that it's up to date, that you are closing ports in timely manner and things like that. So this overhead, of course, but
so is the main vulnerability of firewall.
Firewalls are software packages, so software or hardware packages which might have vulnerabilities in itself, of course, but it's kind of if you are not exposing some management interfaces or things like that, so usually they are pretty secure. Of course, it's not guaranteed that there is not vulnerability which might affect the firewall itself, but they are not very, they are very, very rare.
And Koch and hackers exploit the firewall?
Basically, the only firewall is just protection between your services and some other networks. So usually the exploitation is just, they are not exploiting actually firewall. Firewall in itself, it's not very interesting piece of software or hardware, actually. It's just a wall which protects other services. And for example, you have access to internal network and you want to extract some data from it, but you are not able to connect to your external services because firewall is blocking SSH, HTTP to your network, and basically you are stuck. But you can think creatively, for example, use DNS, which might be allowed to basically travel outside the network, so encapsulate the data you are extracting into DNS packets, and the firewall gonna most probably pass it through. So this is how usually firewalls are exploited. So basically, you look what's allowed in the firewall and basically try to encapsulate information you are extracting or command connections, SSH connections in allowed basically data stream. So
okay, how do you stay up to date on the latest cybersecurity threats and vulnerabilities?
Read Twitter, read Mastodon, probably because security community have migrated mostly to Mastodon network. Read articles, follow blogs, follow researchers. So basically, yeah.
And what would be your professional opinion on future of cybersecurity and penetration testing?
No one knows it, actually. So probably it's going to be important. Is machine learning and artificial intelligence will change something? Definitely going to change something. But interesting thing is that when I started pen testing, the SOAS top 10, top most popular vulnerabilities are almost the same as nowadays. So basically, it was SQL. There was SQL injection. It's still in some form is interesting. Cross-site scripting is still interesting. There are a couple of new attacks. We didn't talk about maybe server-side request forgeries and all other things.
Can you maybe describe the cross-site scripting and forgeries as well?
Cross-site scripting is ability for attacker to execute JavaScript in somewhere, usually in a victim's browser, usually, but it's not not only victim's browser. Server-side request forgery is that you can make web server make some requests on your behalf, so that you send specific query and server gonna send the request and maybe return result, maybe not, but gonna do some actions. So what you are exploiting there is that probably they are much more allowed from this particular server to access some systems than from your side. For example, if it's web server, most probably you are not able to get some internal systems, but maybe this web server is allowed to talk to some internal systems, and in such way you can exploit it. And like very dangerous attack in that regard is access to cloud services metadata. So theoretically, if the configuration is bad and there is such vulnerability, theoretically you can steal access to some administrative access to cloud infrastructure in that way.
Yeah, cloud services are quite popular nowadays.
Yeah, it's quite popular. So for example, you can get administrator access to Amazon
AWS.
AWS, and that's it. So game over for the company.
And how do you do that, for example, if you want to do and get the information?
Again, this is quite a lot of possibilities there. So
it's just
One vector is this server-side request forgery, but then you have to still have these vulnerabilities. You still have misconfiguration in cloud infrastructure and things like that. So in many cases, vulnerabilities are not just one vulnerability. It's basically chain of vulnerabilities, and you have to do quite a lot of things badly to get exploited. So.
And what tools do they need to use, the hackers, to do the server-side request forgery?
in many cases, just browser gonna be fine enough. So probably in browser you can find developers tools, and from developers tools you can do quite a lot of damage actually.
Amazing.
But we usually are using proxy servers, client-side proxy servers, like for example Burp Suite, or there is OWASP Zap Proxy, if I'm quoting correctly. So these are much more easier tools. So basically these are proxy servers which are running on the same machine, usually on the same machine as your browser. And you are able to see all the basically traffic between server and browser and manipulate it, send it again, and basically understand how it works.
How do you determine the risk of level of specific vulnerability?
We use experience in most cases. So basically we have some framework for how we are categorizing it, but in general you can use CVSS scores, calculate them. Some clients are asking for them. Common vulnerability scoring system, but usually we are use experience. For example, if you have administrative access or are able to run commands on the server, so most probably it's very high or very urgent vulnerability. And we usually even prepare some interim reports for the client so that he's able to fix it right away. So,
how is the test report structured, and what information does it include?
Basically, yeah, it has some management summary, obviously, for those who are lazy enough to read the report.
So basically, you have a search vulnerabilities count. And
no,
risk.
We sometimes put the count, but basically we list what you can do with the most critical ones. So what is the impact? Because if you say that it's SQL injection, it doesn't tell much, and many people might even not understand what is SQL injection. But in SQL injection case, we might say that you can get the data from database, or you are able to run the commands, you can run commands and things like that. And there is basically description of the work we've done, so what kind of methodologies we are using, what are limitations. For example, if part of the system doesn't work, so we mention it usually. And then there is description of vulnerabilities listed by the risk levels with technical information, so that the developer, which is competent enough, are able to reproduce them. So do the steps and get to the conclusion. Sometimes we even include video files, so screen capture files of the steps, how to do it.
Amazing.
Because nowadays these vulnerabilities might be very complex. So basically you might need, for example, four steps to get to the end result, and they are not very obvious.
What are the most common mistakes organizations make when it comes to cybersecurity?
Security misconfigurations is definitely top one. But if you look at the vulnerabilities, so basic in the systems, authorization problems are very common, so that someone is able to access the functionality which they are not supposed to access. Then there is quite commonly there are problems with authentication, especially if you are using third-party providers, so like these Google things, banking authentication in Latvia, this Latvia LV authentication, basically federated authentication providers. There are quite a lot of things to where someone might do it wrongly, OAuth too wrongly, so basically implemented not in more secure way. So these are the most popular problems. Cross-site scriptings are very popular nowadays.
What are the biggest challenges you have faced in your career as a cybersecurity tester, and how did you overcome them?
Biggest challenge actually was to find the market for services, because now you are talking about cybersecurity. Well, cybersecurity is very, very important. But the problem is that if you look at 2004, for those who remember 2004 or even 2000, no one was talking about cybersecurity.
So no one actually cared.
There was not such a word, cybersecurity, and it's becoming much more easier to sell, of course, these services, because people are more aware about risks they are facing. But previously, for example, penetration tests are not very cheap, never been very cheap, because people are spending quite a lot of time doing them, and basically you have to compensate them for this time. And when you have a choice, do pen test or buy some new nice used car, so, or implement some new feature in your system, or just do pen test, sometimes people are choosing, let's implement some new system in the system. Which
causes feature. additional threats.
It doesn't mean that it's going to cause more problems, but still, if you are doing pen test, what you're going to get is the report, how bad your system is usually. You have to fix it. You have to pay for fixing in many cases. And then there is question, does the pen tester have found all the flaws? So what I'm telling clients that won't be able to find all the flaws. We're going to try to find most of them, but there still might be some things which are not discovered during pen test. So basically you are paying quite a lot of money for a report, and the pen test companies might choose not to do testing. So they might quote you big money for the pen test, and basically says, oh, everything was fine. So basically make a short report and profit.
Okay. I think let's start wrapping this up. I have two last questions in my mind. One would be, what advice do you have for aspiring cybersecurity testers that looks up to advance their careers?
Nowadays, it's actually they can, these CTFs you mentioned, it's are very good things, participate in bug bounty programs. So the hacker one and background, for example, and try to gather experience. So basically the experience is what matters actually. So more you're going to test, more you're going to be able to find. So, and with CTFs, they might help as well, but I would recommend start doing more real systems. If you are interested in web application security, PortSwigger has very good web security academy. So basically a list of CTFs you can do. They're going to be quite challenging in the end, but the first ones are very, very easy.
Yeah, and the last question that I like is, what is your favorite quote in life? Like your go-to quote, if you have one.
I don't have one.
You don't have one. No one has a quote in life. What's going on? Seriously. Okay, then I think we can do a wrap-up, right? And a big thank you, everyone who joined and listened to our discussion with Agris, where we talked about the IT center, about cybersecurity and penetration testing, who they are, what they are, how they performed, and what challenges and tendencies they have. It was quite insightful discussion. I think you would agree, right?
Yeah, thank you.
If you enjoyed listening, feel free to follow our podcast on Spotify or YouTube, where we'll publish more episodes with experts from different software engineering fields. If you have any comments or anything you'd like to share or topics you'd like us to cover in the next episodes, please feel free to reach out to us on our Instagram profile, Facebook or LinkedIn pages. You can find us by the name TestDevLab, and let's keep advancing our skills and knowledge set. And see you at the next one. Thank you, Agris, that you joined. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.